Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porther with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have former Titans and Steelers wide receiver Nate Washington join us to begin the 8 o'clock hour. We'll get into the Super Bowl matchup with him. Matt Duchene, Predators centerman, joins us at 8:45, and then Adam Vingan from The Athletic at 9:30. So a lot to get to still coming today here on the show. And Joe, last night, another bad night for the Tennessee Volunteers. You thought maybe they're turning a corner. A very nice win, 80-61 over the weekend against Kansas. Now, albeit a Kansas team that is not the same as they typically are, not as good as they typically are, but an impressive win nonetheless. And then the Vols last night returned back to SEC play against Kermit Davis and the Ole Miss Rebels, and they go down. They lose 52-50. Against Ole Miss last night. And I got to say, like, I was looking at the line yesterday on this game before the game, and I think it was, like, Tennessee favored by 2.5. And I was like, am I missing something here?
With Vegas.
What's going on? Like, I would have said, 7.5, 8.5.
Vegas knows. They always know.
They always know. And Ole Miss finds a way to get it done, 52-50, another pretty abysmal night offensively for Tennessee in that game. Joe, what's going on with this group right now? How concerned should Tennessee fans be about this team, especially on that side of the ball offensively?
Yeah, it was a mess. Everyone knows what Kermit Davis does, and it's really good. I love what he does because they bring out that 1-3-1 and they start trapping you. And, they might be in it for 3-4 possessions, but it's effective, and it can really cause problems if you're not ready for it. And yeah, I got into this on Twitter last night with some Vols fans. First of all, always, yes, blame the millionaire when things go wrong. If players aren't prepared for something or they don't execute, blame the coach. I agree. But let's be realistic here. Rick Barnes prepared his team for the 1-3-1. Every coach who plays Kermit Davis teams prepares for the one. They probably do like 7 guys on defense to prepare for it, And it doesn't mean that your players are going to do it right in the game, but it was very disappointing to see some of these terrible turnovers. Josiah James, who had a good game, but he had a really bad one that led to a run out late. That was a key play. And it is concerning with this team. They got hot against Kansas and made a bunch of threes. Great. You're going to have good shooting nights. You're going to have bad shooting nights. I thought last night early they were making a bunch of threes. It's like you can't live and die by that. Like Eve Pons, you can go dunk on anyone, so go drive to the basket and get fouled. This team never gets fouled. They don't drive. Yeah. But then what happens late in games? Oh, Keon Johnson, go to the hole. Well, he did, and he was effective. That's got to happen more. If you aren't going to get Fulkerson playing great, and he hasn't been, and he's not going to be the weapon you thought he was inside, and Pons is just going to shoot jumpers, and great, he's made it in the last couple of games, but you can't be just a jump shooter. Then get Jaden Springer and Keon Johnson going to the hole more often and earlier, because this offense right now is way too much hoping you hit jumpers, and then when you turn it over, you lose a game like that. Brutal loss. Another thing, Robbie, I was just going through the transcript of Rick Barnes' presser. There's a lot of he calls out Fulkerson, again, he calls out various guys. He does every game. It is interesting when I think about Jerry Stackhouse a couple weeks ago, because he called out Miles Stoudy, and there was a lot of uproar about that. And this is something Barnes has done forever, and I have no problem with it. I have a problem with players like not getting money, but I have no problem with coaches calling out players when they don't do well. I also would say, ultimately, it goes on Rick. And we know this. It goes on the coaches. If your guys are doing this stuff, making these mistakes, you got to fix it.
And it's interesting. You talk about the offensive struggles that Tennessee has had, not only in this game. I mean, this has been somewhat of a consistent theme all season long, particularly through conference play here, where they've struggled at times to hit shots and to get the offense going. And Ole Miss capitalized on that last night. Rick Barnes talked about it after the game. Here's what Tennessee head coach Rick Barnes had to say.
Well, I understand some nights when you're not making threes. I mean, we shot the ball early and turned down some shots early. And that, again, it allowed they got a lot of baskets off of our offense. And we talk about the two defense offense being married. I mean, you can't give a team, I haven't even looked yet, it's got to be around 20 points because of, you know, just not passing the ball, executing on the offensive end. And, you know, we were up, we had a chance a couple of times to really stretch it out and put some pressure on them, but missed free throws, some layups or turnovers, let them get back in the game. And then White got aggressive inside scoring and put us in foul trouble. And we didn't have an answer for it.
That's Rick Barnes there talking about, you know, Tennessee missing some shots and that transitioning into offense the other way for Ole Miss. I want to go back on something you hit on, and that is the free throws. Keon Johnson had 8 free throw attempts in this game. There's not another Tennessee player that had more than 2. I mean, that just can't happen. And that goes back to what you're talking about of settling for perimeter shots, not driving to the basket as much as they should. I mean, there's no excuse for John Fulkerson to have 2 free throw attempts in a game. I mean, that just can't happen.
Right. And to Rick's point, so think about, you have, what, 16 turnovers? You got runouts coming off them. And Ole Miss scored 50.
Yeah.
I mean, your defense was good enough. When they had to set up and they had to actually try to earn a shot, they were done. Like, your defense is way too good last night to even come close to losing that game, but you give them freebies, getting them to 50. And yes, the free throws are a problem. You know, a guy who's just really Victor Bailey right now is just struggling. And he's a guy who, if he's not making shots, you know, he can be a little bit of a liability on defense, make some bad plays. I mean, but the turnovers. I mean, Josiah James, again, he has 3. Springer has 3. Fulkerson has 3. You know, Vescovi has a couple. He didn't have a great game last night. He was just 1 for 4. But, yeah, aggression is something that this team lacks. And it is. It's been like Keon Johnson kind of bailed him out last week against, what, Mississippi State, right?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, same thing last night. It's sort of like, okay, well, just give it to Keon and he can get to the hole. Well, do that more. I mean, he got 6 shots. And like you said, 8 free throws. So, in other words, some of those shots were taken away because he got fouled. But get him 10 to 12 shots every game. He's a special talent. You're going to have him for 1 year. May as well maximize what you have. And if that means Victor Bailey only plays 15 minutes a game, then so be it. I mean, their depth was great early in the year, and they were swarming teams and blowing teams out. But at this point, go with your best players.
You know, we talked about on this show this team having an opportunity to make a special run and maybe put together a march and a tournament run like Tennessee has never seen before on the men's side of things. And I got to be honest with you, like watching this team at times play offensively, they are so inconsistent and, like you said, reliant on the perimeter game on that side of the ball where I don't know if I'm seeing this run. And like defensively, I think they're great. I think they've got a chance to hang in there with every team in the country defensively, maybe with the exception of Gonzaga and Baylor with how well they're playing. But offensively, they are just so Jekyll and Hyde with this group that it's hard to trust them on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, the good news is it's February 3rd. I think the pieces are there. You know, I think that they've got the right play. They've got guys that they can be very good on both sides of the ball, and they can be good offensively. Again, you've got to feature Keon Johnson more. Jaden Springer is kind of, I mean, you know, like last night he struggled. He was 1 for 7, you know, and a tough night for him. But some of those were pretty good shots. You know, you get in the lane, you miss those little mid-range that he loves to take. But you got to get those guys going. I think Vescovi runs the team well. But those older guys, you've got to have more from them. And, you know, Josiah James comes out, hits those 3 threes early, but he ends up 3 for 9 in the game. If they're just going to be a jump shooting team, I agree they could be an early out despite that defense. If they're going to go to the hole and be aggressive and get fouled, and you've got to really focus on transition. Another problem last night is, so 10 offensive rebounds for Ole Miss. You can play great D, but if you don't get a clean rebound, then you can't get in transition. This team needs to be in transition, and obviously they were not. And let me. I'm trying to find here the fast break points. I'm sure there were. Yeah. So there you go. Fast break points for Tennessee, 0. For Ole Miss, 15. So Ole Miss has 50 points in a game. They have 15 fast break points, which again, that's basically points off turnovers.
Yeah.
So they have
Tennessee has 0.
18 points off turnovers, 15 fast break points, and they score 50. and you have zero fast break points. If Tennessee has to play half-court basketball the whole time, then I think you're right. I think against the best teams, that it's I don't like their chances. They've got to turn that into clean rebounds and run on teams.
Then Kentucky coming up on Saturday. Well, so we'll see how Tennessee responds to that. Obviously, not the same Kentucky team, but, man, like, you have offensive performances like this. I mean, every team's going to hang in there with you. I mean, it's, they've got to get it figured out on that side of the ball. This is going to be really interesting. Like we've talked about this year with the SEC, it's really not that great of a conference. And you're 5-4 if you're Tennessee in conference play.
I will say about the SEC, though, and I thought Saturday was a pretty good advertisement for the SEC. There's a lot of good teams. Yeah, you don't have – I mean, in recent years, you've had multiple top 10 teams, including Tennessee, Kentucky. And when Kentucky's down, the SEC's down. That's just how it is. But it's a pretty good league. It's just – you're right. 5-4, you can't be 5-4. I mean, this team I thought was going to run away with the SEC championship, which is going to be Alabama now. Which they're still undefeated. So that alone is disappointing. Hopefully there is an SEC tournament in Nashville.
Yeah.
Because I'd love to see Tennessee and Alabama play again if they're playing well. But, yeah, that was just a – I thought, you know, they're okay. They're getting out of that funk. They looked really good against Kansas. Here they go. And I thought it looked exactly like that in the first half of this game, and then very disappointing.
Coming up next, we will switch gears to the football side of things for the Tennessee Volunteers. There was a move right there for new Tennessee head coach Josh Heupel to make. And he did not make it. Why didn't he go that route? What sort of advantage could it have given the Vols if he did? We'll discuss that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, we talked last week about Tennessee and the decision to bring Kevin Steele into the fold on their defensive staff while you're in the middle of an investigation and while at the time the future of your head coach was very much in question with Jeremy Pruitt on the fold. And Kevin Steele comes in, he puts in about 2.5 weeks worth of work, and then all of a sudden finds himself on the outs without a job, and now Tennessee owes him around $800,000. In terms of his buyout number for being there 2 weeks. So it's not a bad job if you can get it for Kevin Steele. But the question is, if you're Josh Heupel, you're coming in, you've got a guy that technically at the time is already on staff. He's been a very accomplished defensive coordinator. I think by all accounts, a really good coach on that side of the ball. And you let him go. Why, if you're Josh Heupel, do you not keep Kevin Steele in the fold when you've already got him on staff? You've seen him have success at the SEC level. And quite frankly, you're bringing in a staff of your own that's still being finalized now and still kind of getting to that point where you would assume a lot of guys are coming with him from UCF. Why would you not want a guy like Kevin Steele on your staff if you're Josh Heupel?
Well, David Ubben kind of brought this up when we had him on last week. And I get what he was saying, which was basically, okay, so Kevin Steele's a Tennessee guy. He was a finalist for the job before. He probably came in, well, for one thing, free money, come on in. But he probably came in with the possibility that he could get a shot at it. And so now this guy's looking over your shoulder and you want to keep him? Like, I get that. But, I mean, if you're Josh Heupel, you just got the job. You're getting paid a lot of money. You're going to get your chance to be the coach at Tennessee. Like is Kevin Steele going to, you know, stage some coup? No.
In what, like 1 year?
Right. Like,
that's not going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I understand what happened. Whatever happened with Kevin Steele and Gus Malzahn, I hope they can be friends again someday. But to me, if you're Josh Heupel and you look at Kevin Steele, first of all, how could you not be intrigued by what he's done as a defensive coordinator? He's been really good. I mean, really, Auburn over the last few years of, and I think this is probably why there was some momentum for Kevin Steele. There was at least some momentum with boosters apparently at Auburn for Kevin Steele. The defense was keeping that program going. I mean, they were winning despite their offense in a lot of cases because Kevin Steele had a really strong defense. So if you could say, hey, you are the head coach of, we'll call you the head coach. You're the head coach of the defense, right. Kevin. Take it over. Construct a good SEC defense. You know how to do it. You've done it before. Now I don't have to worry about that if I'm Josh Heupel. You know, I mean, of course you're the head coach, you're the CEO, you worry about everything, but you can focus on what you're trying to do on your side of the ball as a play caller, as a quarterback developer. I mean, who are you going to find who is better than him?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. And look, you know, Josh Heupel has put it out there that, you know, he's focused on getting the right people hired on his staff rather than, you know, making the fast hire. So, you know, we've had some Tennessee fans on Twitter talk about, okay, why is the staff not together yet? Like, you've got National Signing Day today, which, as we know, we'll talk about here in a minute. Not quite the same today as it used to be, but the staff still not technically together for Josh Heupel. Certainly has not been announced yet at this point. But I think a lot of Tennessee fans are looking at Heupel and wondering, all right, defensively, that's a part that you really struggled with at UCF anyway. You need a guy that's got experience of doing that at a high level. I think a lot of Tennessee fans are concerned that Heupel's going to go out, whether he's bringing in his guy from UCF or whether he's bringing in a guy that he's worked with before at Missouri or wherever at the defensive level. It's not going to be as good as Kevin Steele, not going to be as accomplished as Kevin Steele. And if you're really focused on hiring the right staff and the best possible staff, I think that's a tough sell if Kevin Steele's right there in your lap and you bring in somebody else just because maybe you're uncomfortable with the situation or whatever the case may be. I think that'll be a tough sell for Heupel.
Would Kevin Steele, like, stick around? Because I've heard this, too. I'll just make him a, you know, analyst, whatever. Make him do work for the money. Like, you are going to stay here and work, my friend. You are on the staff. You're working for this $900K. See, but and you could do that, but to me, like, if you're Kevin Steele, I'm only happy as Kevin Steele if I at least get the DC job, right?
Yeah, like I mean, I guess it's possible because he is a Tennessee guy, and maybe he just wants to be around in the program and help them, quote-unquote, fix it, but I don't see Kevin Steele signing up for something like that. Just my thoughts on it.
He's like, actually, I'm going to go play golf. Here's my address.
And you're going to pay me anyway.
Yeah. Or actually, I'm going to get direct deposit, okay? And I'll be on the golf course. John Bryce of Football Scoop he reported that Zach Arnett, Mississippi State, D.C., could be a candidate. And that's fine. I mean, okay, he's a rising coach on the defensive side of the ball. So you go younger there. I mean, Kevin Steele's 62. But I think based on what we've seen, granted, very short period of time, you know, Heupel, this is sort of like, let's go to Vrabel, okay? No one likes Shane Bowen as the hire after last year. But it is, I mean Vrabel is a defensive guy, and this is his defense, so it's not surprising he wants someone who knows this defense. So with Heupel, are you married to anything you've done defensively yet?
I would hope not.
Yeah, please don't be. You know, so this is to me, this is a heck of an opportunity. You got a guy there, and I understand the impulse to, I want to build my own staff. This is going to be me. I'm not going to have anybody forced on me. But, like, if he meets with Kevin Steele and they don't hate each other, I mean, I think it could actually be a nice find for him that's just sort of ready-made.
Yeah, and I think sometimes coaches just get in their own way. And the common sense answer that's right there in front of you, sometimes you don't follow that. And look, I don't know if Kevin Steele is even interested in hanging around as a defensive coordinator under Heupel's staff. You know, maybe he really liked Jeremy Pruitt and Philip Fulmer and is rubbed the wrong way about how this whole thing has gone on. Now, he also got paid, you know, close to $900,000 for 2 weeks' work, so I don't know how upset you could be about it. But if it truly is Heupel just not even considering it, to me, that doesn't make any sense. Like, that is not a good start in terms of hiring your staff. Now, look, he's ultimately going to be judged by, you know, the long haul here. I don't think anything he does in the next year or two in terms of the win-loss total, unless it's just well above expectations, is going to have any bearing on his job. I think the clock is really going to start on him probably 3 years into it, and that's where it starts because that's just the situation this football program is in. So maybe from that standpoint, you do want to bring in your own guy and bring in a guy for the long haul. But Kevin Steele, I mean, 62, he's not young, but he's also not ancient. I mean, he could hang around for the next 5 years. I mean, no problem at all. So if Heupel didn't make that call or have that interview and what David Oven brought up with us last week about maybe being uncomfortable about that, I think that would be a bad look.
Yeah, I mean, over the long haul, again, you look at how they built that defense at Auburn, it seemed to get better and better. So you could be in position when the clock starts. You actually have, because that's, I mean, that's one of those big questions is this offense, can you pair it with a good defense? Some defensive coaches are like, I don't want to be the DC when that's the offense,
because
it's very tough on a defense. But, gosh, you would think, I don't know. It's interesting with Kevin Steele. Obviously, he wants to be a head coach. But what's his path to that if you're him? I mean, everybody loves free money, but clearly the guy has passion to coach still. He made a push for the Auburn head coaching job. I mean, if you have a chance to be the DC at Tennessee and you can bring it back, I think that speaks pretty well. Now, then you're talking, you're 65. I mean, that's just a reality of things for him. But if he wants to keep going, how many better opportunities is he going to have than this one right here?
Well, the other part of it is recruiting, too, because I'll be honest with you, that's, to me, a huge concern if you're a Tennessee fan about Josh Heupel, is how well can he recruit. You've got to recruit at a top 12 to 14 level at Tennessee if you hope to compete. I mean, that's just what it is. I mean, Ari Wasserman from The Athletic kind of laid that out the other day of it's probably not going to go that way in the first stretch here for Josh Heupel, but his challenge in 2022, get in the teens. Like, keep yourself around that top level and build your way back up. But recruiting was going the wrong way at UCF, and Kevin Steele's a guy maybe can help you in that area. That to me, if I'm a Tennessee fan, maybe is the biggest concern, is you could be bringing in a staff that has – I won't say little, but very little limited experience recruiting in the SEC level and at this part of the country.
Right. And, you know, you talk about 3 years on judging Heupel. I agree on the results. A lot of judging Heupel is going to be how he does in state in 2022.
Yeah.
Because it's – and I think, look, this state, to me, as we move forward, you're going to have – more classes like this too, because the talent level has risen in this state. Population has risen in this state, but that's a huge early test of him and his staff, because you've got to score in state in that class and show that you can hang with the big boys who are going to be coming in here trying to raid the state.
And speaking of recruiting, today in years past, a gigantic day in terms of recruiting in college football. And now, to be honest, at times, it kind of just feels like any other day on the college football landscape. Why is that? Will that ever change? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune in every weekday morning at 8:45 when the Preds have a weekday game for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. The next chance to participate will be tomorrow morning. The Preds taking on the Florida Panthers. New division rival, the Florida Panthers, tomorrow. So make sure you're listening for Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka at 8:45. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll be joined by Nate Washington to begin the 8 o'clock hour, get into Super Bowl week with him. Matt Duchesne coming up at 8:45 for his weekly visit. And then Adam Vingan from The Athletic at 9:30 to get into the latest with the Nashville Predators as well. But right now, Joe, talking college football, and today is National Signing Day in college football. It has typically been, for most of the history, especially in the last 20, 25 years, a huge day in the world of college football. Recruiting is the name of the game, as we know, and recruiting has become something that's followed 24/7, 365 days a year in college football. But now, with the early signing period being introduced a few years ago, and that really becoming the quote-unquote National Signing Day, It kind of feels like the technical National Signing Day, which is today, has almost completely gone by the wayside in the world of college football. Like, we were talking about Tennessee in the last segment and recruiting with Josh Heupel, and you kind of looked at the spots they had available coming into this day on National Signing Day. There's not a ton there. I mean, they have maybe some room for some transfers and maybe one or two more signings, but there's not a lot there. The luster of National Signing Day in college football pretty much is totally gone and has been replaced by the early signing period.
See, normally on this day, it's just I mean, again, if you're on Twitter, you almost need to get off Twitter unless you just love this stuff, because it's nothing but, and here's another fax. And
hype videos from, you know, different accounts.
Yeah, now I am looking. I'm looking at Chad Bishop at Vanderbilt. He's got, you know, Vanderbilt just got Michael Mincy, linebacker from Georgia, has signed. So there you go. So you got a little bit of this today, but it's not like before. Now, for someone like me who loves basketball, I'm okay with February not having this national holiday anymore, but it does, it feels different, because really that is now the earlier one, and that's at a time when there isn't a void to fill. That's a small, I mean, to me, it's not a big deal, because, you know, I have to say, as a college beat writer for a long time, having to spend a lot of these days keeping up with, has this guy signed yet? Oh, it's 4 o'clock. Oh, better call his mom. What's going on? Like, I love not having to track every second of it, but I know college football fans, some of them love it. I mean, you're a huge Vols fan. Are you like a, you know, like on signing day, pins and needles, waiting for this guy or that guy?
I've never really been able to get into it all that much. I mean, look, I've seen recruiting classes come in that look really good on paper and then flame out, and I've seen not great recruiting classes come in and then look really good 3 years later. Like, it's, to me, it's so hard when you're, you know, 18, 21 years old to really predict that. But, you know, unless you're Alabama bringing in just an incredible amount of talent every year, it's always been hard for me to kind of to get into it that way. But I will say the early signing period has made it, I think, a little bit more fascinating with me, just in terms of the race to get these commitments in and get them signed. It's almost become a bidding war without, like, the money being visible on the table. It's been pretty incredible to watch that way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, certainly, you know, I think the good thing about the early signing period is that some guys just want it over with, and they can have it over with, and that's great. You don't have to have coaches constantly dogging you all the way to the end. Now, some of these top recruits wait until the very, very end, and there's a lot of people who really are interested in them, and, you know, I think you can easily read in some cases, well, the price keeps going up. You know, that's what's happening. But I think it's a good thing overall. You know, when you talk about you brought up Ari Wasserman earlier, and I don't know how much you follow Ari, but Ari he's a great recruiting writer. He covers recruiting for us nationally for The Athletic. I love Ari. He used to cover Ohio State. But he is, like, all that matters is recruiting.
Yeah.
All that matters is stars and recruiting.
Well, Ubbin's kind of the same way.
He's more on that side. But Ari's like, I mean, seriously, like, he had a debate with someone like, well, oh, you don't think Saban? Oh, yeah, whatever. Saban's running the same three plays. It's just talent. Like, no, it's not that. Of course it's not that. Now, do they matter over a period of time? If you have 4 and 5 stars, you have to have a certain amount. There's statistical analyses of this. You know, if you aren't at a certain amount, a certain percentage of your roster, 4 and 5 stars, like, those teams don't win national championships.
Yeah.
So certainly there's a correlation. But my big test for this for anyone is go back 10 years or 20 years or whatever you want to do, 15 years, 12 years, and get a top 100 list of basketball recruits. And then go back the same period of time and get your top 100 list of football recruits. The basketball recruits, because they play the sport against each other every day, and coaches can see them, and it's a very clear who's the best in basketball. Very
right.
Easy to – they play the game against each other. That top 100 list of basketball recruits will be – you will know most of them. The top 100 list of football recruits, I bet you 70 names, you're like, who the heck is that?
Yeah, I know.
Because football is just – there's so much more strength training and development to even get ready to play at the next level. Some guys, of course – Clowney, Julio Jones, duh. They're going to be stars. But how many guys are really like that? 10, 12 a year?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that many. After that, it's so much about what you decide to do on a daily basis and how you develop and all that stuff. And there's a lot of programs in this country who, including the one I covered, but Wisconsin's an example, Iowa's an example, you know, Mississippi State under Dan Mullen is an example of not recruiting at this super high level, but having teams that are much better than that because you develop players. And that's going to be, you know, for Tennessee, I think you're right. You got to be top 12, top 14 or whatever, right in that range. You have to be if you want to win championships. But you know what? If you had some classes around 20 and you had a lot of hits and you had a great rate in terms of development, you could still have championship teams out of that. I believe that.
Yeah, I do too. And that's the name of the game for Josh Heupel now is how well can you develop these players? I mean, Tennessee, it's down right now. You're gonna land a pretty good recruiting class at Tennessee unless you just totally screw it up. Like Derek Dooley finally got to a point where he couldn't even recruit at Tennessee, which is, I mean, it's pretty hard to do. I mean, Butch Jones,
in a short period of time,
to his credit, recruited pretty well at Tennessee. Jeremy Pruitt did as well, maybe a little bit impermissibly there on that front, but it's not like it's uncommon there. I mean, Josh Heupel should have the ability to recruit at Tennessee at a pretty high level.
Jeremy Pruitt got caught speeding. Butch Jones didn't get caught speeding.
Right.
Josh Heupel, you better be speeding. Speed away, my friend. Get those poachers and don't get caught because you have to play. You have to be in those waters. You know, with Josh Heupel, it's a negative trend with UCF, but it's such a short period of time. Like you have to, like if it was 5 years and it was on the steady decline, then it's like, how do you argue with that? Clearly,
right.
there's a problem here. We'll see. You know, we'll see with him. I mean, when you're wearing the Tennessee shirt out there, makes a big difference. It automatically does. But his staff that he's putting together, and I know everybody wants to see the staff right now, but it's been a week. You know, Jeremy Pruitt was the coach like two weeks. No, he was the coach 2 weeks.
Oh,
like
2 weeks.
2 days ago.
Yeah, I thought you meant when he first put his staff together. It took forever.
Right. And of course, then he just kept firing guys. You know, you got to give hype a little time, but this staff. It's so hard, I think, in this league, like especially if you're a Tennessee trying to rise up. How much do you devote to? Okay, I don't know about this guy as a position coach, but the guy has a recruiting record, and how much do you focus on coaching? I think Pruitt maybe went too far in the recruiting side of things, and clearly, you know, with Niedermeyer, who is going to be scapegoated heavily here, a guy who was very sloppy in the things that a lot of assistant coaches do in this game.
There is some movement on the Tennessee front. Chase McGrath from USC, a kicker, has transferred to Tennessee. So,
all right.
Getting a kicker into the fold.
Get excited, baby.
Yeah, buddy.
We got to have one.
That's the movement so far on signing day for the Vols.
11th-year senior Brent Somaglia is going elsewhere.
Yeah,
so, you got to have a kicker. Congratulations, Tennessee.
Way to go, Tennessee. You're going to be able to kick the ball through the uprights.
Who was the kicker that you just absolutely despised? Was it Aaron Medley?
Oh, there was Medley. There was Pilardi. There was Daniel Lincoln. There was a ton of them. Tennessee's had a nice run of kickers I haven't liked as of late. Somaglia was okay.
Maybe you'll like McGrath.
Pretty good.
Yeah, maybe so.
Maybe this is it. McGrath and Valus Jones reunited.
I think the last kicker I really liked at Tennessee is probably James Wilhoit back in the day. Like 04, the last kick against Florida. That's probably it. Good old Hendersonville boy, James Wilhoit.
Nice, Hendersonville.
Yeah, buddy. Saw that guy kick in high school. It's like, my God.
So Tennessee might sign how many guys today?
Oh, I don't think it's going to be very active. I think Ryan Callahan from GoVols 24/7 said this could be the least active day for Tennessee on National Signing Day in a long, long time. So I would not expect a ton today.
See what this is where like the scout, you know, like they'd probably be out trying to sign. I mean, they're going to have a shortage. The problem is you can only have so many in your class.
Right.
But they're going to have an overall shortage. I wonder if you didn't have the limitations, if it would be different. But then again, who's out there that you really want?
Yeah, that's
that's the problem.
I mean,
other than top guys that you're not going to get in on right now.
Exactly. So that's going to be interesting to monitor. We'll see what Josh Heupel does in the coming days and weeks, especially regarding the staff that he puts together. We'll keep you updated here on Robbie and Rexroad. When we come back, it's time for The Choice Is Yours. Joe Rexroad in the questions tier this week. That's next. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it's that time of the week, time for The Choice Is Yours here on Robbie and Rexroad. We throw out different scenarios, both in life and in sports, and then we debate on how we would respond to said scenarios. As always, we appreciate your participation on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rexroad, you are in the questions chair today on The Choice Is Yours. So without further ado, I turn things over to you.
So it's a Super Bowl edition.
Oh, boy.
And this is very much the theme throughout, okay? So keep that in mind. Okay. And this is a much more open-ended. I mean, a lot of these questions, it's sort of like either or.
Sure.
This or that. We got, you know, Black Sheep playing in the background. This is a little bit more open-ended. And some of them, I mean, there's a little bit more of an advantage for me because I've thought of the answers. But I'll give you guys a little bit of time.
Part of the ability is to think on the fly. That's on Porth and I to do this.
So, let's go sports or non-sports?
Let's go sports.
Okay, sports. Now, here's another thing is it's very non-sportsy. Okay.
So, okay, all right.
So, let's go. Open-ended, get right to it. Two things. Your best Super Bowl commercial and halftime show.
Oh, that's a good one. I really enjoyed Prince and the halftime show. Now, that is because Prince has a special place in my heart. I grew up listening to Prince, so I enjoyed Prince. I mean, there have been a lot of good ones. Bruno Mars, I thought was great. I love Justin Timberlake. I thought he was really good as well. But I think if I had to pick one, especially a recent one, I'm probably going with Prince as my favorite halftime performer. Although I'm very interested to see The Weeknd coming up this weekend. Wow, Weeknd coming up this weekend on the Super Bowl. That's going to be interesting to see. I like him too. So interested to see how that goes. In terms of favorite Super Bowl commercials, the Budweiser ones every year, they've got like the Clydesdales. Those are good. I mean, some make you laugh. Some make you cry. Apparently we're not seeing those this year. We'll see. But
yeah, that's very disappointing.
I think I'd have to go with the Budweiser ones. Those are always really good.
Good choices.
Now, there was also that, I guess it was the NFL 100 where they've got all these legends. That one was pretty good.
That's a great commercial. Porth?
I would have to go with the Doritos commercials are usually pretty funny. Bruno Mars, Katy Perry's Super Bowl halftime show was pretty epic. Hard to hate on Prince's halftime show. That was pretty outstanding as well.
Yeah.
But Bruno, I think, for me, takes the cake. Because I love Bruno, and I thought he was awesome.
Yeah.
Those are good choices. For a halftime show, I'm going U2 in 2002.
That was a good
one. Anybody remembers it, and this was after 9/11. They listed all the victims of 9/11. Also, I mean, I'm a huge U2 fan. Also, if you're not a U2 fan, I don't care. If you have a chance to see U2 play live, go do it. I promise you it will be worth your while. As far as commercials, so you go way back, and some of my answers here are going way back. You know, Mean Joe Green and the Pepsi.
Oh, yeah.
The jersey. I mean, it's hard to beat that one. There's a Cindy Crawford Pepsi commercial in the early 90s that still, you know, I mean, of course, I had like Cindy Crawford posters, so like a special place in my heart. But I think I love all the Budweiser, the Pepsi, the Doritos have all been great. There was a Macintosh commercial, and you guys wouldn't remember this, but it was like George Orwell, 1984, the Apple Macintosh was new. And that, like, it still, like, I can still see. When that thing hit, it was like, whoa, crazy. But, number one, Where's the Beef?
Oh, yes.
People don't realize that Where's the Beef
yes.
was a Super Bowl commercial.
Yes.
And, I mean, you know it.
Oh, yeah.
Porth?
Sure.
You look...
sure.
You don't know the Where's the Beef? All right, you need to YouTube Where's
just
the YouTube. Beef.
Now, I've got a very quick bone to pick with you. The Mean Joe Green commercial was Coca-Cola, not Pepsi.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, duh. That's so bad. Here? I'm so bad. I apologize.
Okay. Ooh,
come on, Joe.
Oh,
come on. I've blown it. Oh, gosh, I knew that, too. And I hate Pepsi. I love Coke. What's wrong with me? Okay. Non-sports. Again, open-ended. Who is the great? What is the greatest superhero movie of all time?
Ooh, that's a good. I think my immediate response is Avengers Endgame. It's very good, but I feel like that's the easy response. So I am going to go off the wall. I guess it's a little bit off the wall. The Dark Knight with Heath Ledger and Batman and Christopher Bale as Batman. Christian Bale as Batman. pretty good. Hard to beat. So I will go. The first answer is Avengers Endgame because it's great. But the non-easy answer, The Dark Knight.
Tough one for you, Porth. Have you seen any superhero movies?
Do you know
movies?
Any superhero movies?
I haven't watched many of them.
Have you not seen
Captain
The Dark
Underpants?
Knight? The Dark Knight?
I've seen The Dark Knight.
Okay.
It was fine.
Avengers Endgame?
No.
There's no way.
Because those are the top two to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked Superman as a kid.
Like the Christopher Reeve Superman?
Yeah.
Those are great. Yeah.
I'll go Superman.
Okay. All right.
No love for Spider-Man? Okay.
There's so many Spider-Mans. Yeah, the Dark Knight is the right
answer. I think I meant Spider-Man.
What do you mean you meant Spider-Man? It's like the Spider-Man and Superman, not the same.
A lot of the same letters there.
I said Christopher Reeve. So wait, are you talking about like Tobey Maguire Spider-Man?
Yes.
Okay.
Spider-Man, not
that's
Superman.
A heck of a difference.
That's a little different.
I was super, or not super. I was Spider-Man for Halloween one year.
All right. We'll go with that then. But The Dark Knight is the right answer. We can all agree, right?
Yes, except Porth, who confuses Marvel and DC and Spider-Man and Superman. There we go.
All right, I'm coming right back to you, Porth. You have a chance to have a sideline pass on either sideline for the entire game of any previous Super Bowl. You can go anywhere. You can go stand next to the head coach, the owner. You can go anywhere on the sideline.
Spider-Man.
Be there for you can act like you're – yeah, you can be dressed up as Spider-Man if you like. With your little plastic mask. Any Super Bowl and either sideline, which are you choosing?
Do I have to pick the sideline of the team?
Yeah, pick the team too.
I would have to go with the Giants in 07.
Oh, that's a good one.
The Giants in 07, the David Tyree catch. Plaxico having the go-ahead touchdown. Michael Strahan was probably a character on that sideline. Tom Coughlin. I'll go that.
That's good. I like that.
I'm going Robbie? Super Bowl One. Super Bowl One, the Green Bay Packers.
Oh,
the
yes.
Chiefs. Bart Starr out there. Give me the Packers sideline. Number one, I've seen some like NFL Films footage of this, but apparently like the tickets to get into Super Bowl One were like $6.
Right.
Like it was
were
nuts.
They that much?
I think they may not have even been that much. But it was just kind of viewed as an afterthought. I think it would be awesome. Like, you could pick any Super Bowl now, and just the spectacle of it all would be great. I think it would be awesome to go back and just view Super Bowl One through that lens and just look at what it was then and what it's become now.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
I figured it would be some Packers, and I'm glad you went all the way back. And so, wait, was it Max McGee?
Yes, it was. Max McGee.
Hungover as all get up.
Conditioning was great back then.
Yeah, yeah, like smoking cigarettes on the sideline and MVP of the game. That's a great pick. All right, so for me, it's actually easy. It's January 9th, 1977. In Pasadena, the greatest setting in sports, at least on the mainland, the Rose Bowl. Just like you should see you two. Go to the Rose Bowl if you get a chance. Raiders 32, Vikings 14. I'm on that Raiders sideline with John Madden. We talked about
football
him earlier.
Coach.
Coaching. With Al Davis prowling the sideline. Kenny the Snake Stabler. Lester Hayes. Fred Biletnikoff. Cliff Branch. Dave Casper. Cigarettes. Beer. Steroids. I mean,
steroids.
It would be an amazing afternoon. And then you're in Pasadena. It's the late 70s. And go see like what Hollywood's like, you know? I mean, I guess if you can extend the fantasy. So there you go. Got to do the Raiders. Of those years. All right, last one. What is going in your Super Bowl?
Okay, so I see you there. So
we're not
meal of choice.
Well, yeah, but it's something that has to be in a bowl for the Super Bowl. So you got to eliminate pizza. We're eliminating wings and a lot of the things that we think of. But if you have to eat food from a bowl in this for this game, what is it?
White chicken chili. Throw a little white chicken chili concoction in there. Mix in some cheese. You can mix in some peppers in there, too, if you want to. It's hard to beat, you know, a Super Bowl Sunday with a little chili. But I've been on a big white chicken chili kick lately. So that is my Super Bowl of choice there.
Can it be a dip? Because
it's in a bowl.
Well, yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, I'm thinking like you're eating what's in the bowl. So
sure.
If you love the dip so much that you would eat it with a spoon, I think that's a heck of a dip.
Well, you take
onion dip in there?
You take the spoon and you put it in the dip and you put it on your plate.
Okay, fine.
So that you don't double dip. The Skyline Chili Cheese Dip.
Oh, yeah.
Skyline Chili.
I make it
cheese
every.
No Gold Star?
No. No. What Joe said earlier, I'm blocking an 8-year-old on that shot. Skyline Chili Cheese Dip. You put some cream cheese on the base, and then you put Skyline Chili on it, and then a bunch of cheese. You put it in the oven for like 20 minutes, you're good to go.
See, I love Skyline Chili, but I can't imagine it without the noodles. You know what I mean? Like, to me, it's got to be
the dip.
And it actually could do that in a bowl.
The chip dip is very, very good.
Cream cheese base, the Skyline Chili, and what kind of cheese on top?
Just whatever. Whatever cheese you want.
Okay.
Cheddar cheese, Monterey Jack, whatever.
All right. I like that. So, it's weird. Like, we both had the dark night, and white chicken chili is my exact answer, too. But more specifically,
you've been
following me? I made white chicken chili for a neighborhood. I've told this story, right? Have I told this story?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell it again. I made the most amazing batch of white chicken chili for our neighborhood. Huge competition. I mean, it was competitive. I spent days on this. I honed the recipe. It was beautiful. And then I plugged it in and was bringing it to the table for the judging. And, you know, you need to put it on the table first, then plug it in. So I lost it, and it spilled and shattered everywhere. And I ran home and cried.
Like Kevin in The Office?
It was a lot like that. And I was like, I'm going to go get stuff to clean it up. And I ran because I was so upset. I needed to be away from people so I could curl up in a ball and cry. That exact chili is what I would pick because I think it was the best batch of chili I've ever made.
Very nice. Well done on this edition of The Choice Is Yours. I think the biggest takeaway I have is we got some work to do on Ryan Porth and his superhero movies. My God.
I mean, you know, Spider-Man, Superman.
Same difference,
Marvel,
baby.
DC,
come on.
Whatever.
One of them shoots webs, the other one shoots laser beams out of their eyes. Come on.
The funny thing is I said Christopher Reeve's like, oh, yeah, Christopher Reeve.
Yeah, Christopher Reeve.
The 70s or the 2000s.
With Tobey Maguire. great edition of The Choice Is Yours. Well done, Joe Rexrod. When we come back, we'll switch gears, dive into the Super Bowl. Nate Washington, former Titans and Steelers wide receiver, will join us. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexrod live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.